All right, everybody remember the setting now. Luke 14, this is the third time in the Gospel of Luke Jesus has been a guest in the home of a Pharisee. There are some things that each one of these visits certainly have in common because of the nature of the host. This time it is a ruler of the Pharisees. There are four movements to the story, to the teaching that takes place here. Each of the conversation, each part of the conversation is directed to a different individual or group of individuals who are guests in this occasion. And we're going to focus on one main point with each one of these with these sections. So with that said, verses 2 through 6 are important. They kind of set the stage for the rest of it. John, you read that section for us, please.
Luke 14?
Yes. You might just start with 1 and read through 6.
Okay. On the Sabbath, when he went to die at the house of the ruler of the Pharisees, they were watching carefully, and behold, there was a man before him who had dropsy. And Jesus responded to the lawyers and Pharisees, saying, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" But they remained silent. Then he took him and healed him and sent him away. And he said to them, "Which of you, having a son or an ox that has fallen into a well on the Sabbath day, will not immediately pull him out?" And they could not reply to these things.
All right. Now, just look at that, and we'll try to do this with a discussion type of an approach. So the first thing that strikes my mind when I read this is it your impression in looking at the information we're given, especially in verses 1 through 3, that the presence of the man with dropsy is not just happenstance, but that it's related somehow to the fact that it says they were watching him carefully. Do you get the impression that the presence of the man and watching him carefully goes together? And if it does go together, how in your mind might it go together? All right, if this is a meal on the Sabbath day where a man had to go to some trouble to make arrangements, as we discussed last week, and if there is present there a man with dropsy, and if we do have the background at least two previous times in the Gospel of Luke where Jesus has done things on the Sabbath day that they have questioned, do you get the impression that maybe this is an arranged meeting to see indeed what he would do? And so you have that very fact means that there are some motives running in the background of this that will have an important bearing on the entire rest of this conversation. So bear that in mind. Now, here is Jesus as a guest in the Pharisee's house. Here's the presence of the man with dropsy. Now, are there options open to the Lord about how to respond to the presence of this man?
Sure.
All right. Well, tell me what some of them would have been.
Don't even come back the next
time. All right, he could have said, "I'll see you tomorrow," or whatever. All right, that would be one. What else?
He just said, "Tomorrow you'll be healed."
Tomorrow you'll be healed. All right, he has had that ability. That's right. What else?
It wouldn't have been in his character that he could have just ignored
it. All right, both of those statements are true. Wouldn't have been in his character, but it no one would have blamed him, would it? Or do you think they would have?
They would have either way.
I think they might have either way, too. But he could have just said, "Look, I'm here as a guest. This is not a healing service. I'm not obligated to do anything to it for him." What else, Travis?
Well, in reading the next parable, we're not there yet, but could it have been that the Pharisees invited this man over to show how good they were to other people, you know, that were less fortunate?
Yeah, but in that case, it would have said they were watching that man carefully. See what I mean? If they had invited this man to show that they had compassion and that they were they were open to having the downtrodden as their guest, then they would have been seeing him. But there's no, I don't think there's any accident of the fact that they're watching Jesus carefully and not the man, John.
It's like they put Jesus in a helping situation.
All right. All right, I think they might have thought that, okay.
Jesus could have taken him aside and not done this quite as openly and publicly. He could have been a little bit more on the sly.
Can I see you outside for a second?
Or?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Let's say he was in front of him. That kind of leads me to the idea that he was planned, because they usually make their seating arrangements on purpose.
They seem to be pretty careful about the seating arrangements with the rest of it, doesn't it? All right, let me ask you another question. What, now, given all this setting here, him as a guest, the presence of this man, the motives that are going on, what issue does Jesus identify in this situation?
Hypocrisy.
All right, there is some hypocrisy, but what particular issue? Is it lawful to do this on the Sabbath day? Now, we're dealing again with the question of what the law actually said. You shall do no work on the Sabbath, versus the traditions of the fathers on of how to keep from breaking the law that the Pharisees majored in. And so there, the point I'm getting at here is that Jesus does not just toss the law out the window here in doing this, but he definitely does challenge the assumptions that these Pharisees have had with regard to the traditions of the fathers. His question is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? Now, it says they remain silent. Why? Why didn't that? If that, I get the impression that is what they, that's why they've set this up. They don't believe that it is. They think they have Jesus in a trap. Why don't they say so? All right, they don't have to be the ones who commit themselves to it. That would look like, okay.
They want to see what he's going
to
do.
They want to see what he's going to do. That might look like that they have no concern at all for the man, which turns out to look like it's the case to me. But they remain silent. Jesus, they often did that whenever Jesus would raise questions that showed their own failures. It says now that the Lord takes the man and heals him and sends him away. All right, that settled the issue whether it was lawful to heal on the Sabbath day. Now, he doesn't leave it there. I get the impression that they're watching him is not absolved by that action. So what failure now does Jesus, what failure on the part of the lawyers and Pharisees does Jesus bring to light? Having healed the man, sent him away. All right.
He's saying something like that was valuable to them, that needed to be taken care of on the Sabbath. They would have done the same thing. This man was as much to Jesus as a son or an ox would have been to them.
All right. They made themselves ways to get around the regulation whenever a cost to themselves would be involved. For example, if an ox or a donkey falls into a well, then they allowed that animal could be pulled out of compassion and so forth.
It would just be
they allowed that. However, if you have a man, then that man could not be healed on the Sabbath day because that would be work.
There's no profit in it.
Maybe that's it. But that's the sense. They wanted to claim for themselves the right to pull their donkey out of the well on the Sabbath day, but they wanted to forbid Jesus from helping a man on the Sabbath day. And that was not a, that was not within their authority to make those kinds of declarations. And so that's the that brings us back, if you think about it, to the way in Matthew 23 when the hypocrisy question comes up, where the Lord charged them with having tithed the mint and anise and cumin, but having left undone the weightier matters like justice and mercy and faith. And in this case, they were upholding a rule, but neglecting a principle. And they were upholding a tradition, but ignoring the meaning. Okay, Russ?
And my guess is, at least many of the Pharisees were probably very sincere in thinking that they were doing what God wanted, and just misguided.
And while they were misguided, they refused to be challenged or corrected or taught about it. And we all get misguided. The hard thing is when someone challenges or confronts us with where our weakness is, then we get defensive. And I noticed that verse 6 says that they could not reply to these things, meaning not that they couldn't have said something, but that they had nothing that they could convict Jesus of. They couldn't defend themselves. So I've suggested that the main lesson on this first point is that when you're dealing with Jesus, you don't just watch critically like they're doing. You let good be done wherever there is the opportunity to do that. We as Christians have nothing to object about with good being done where it truly helps a human being in ways that fit with God's law, and I think that's a good way to summarize this first point. All right, now look at the second thing, the second movement. The first is that we just studied is verse 3 says he responds to the lawyers and the Pharisees. They are the influential ones in this setting. They're always at the house of a ruler of the Pharisees. Now, this next part is to those who were invited. In other words, his fellow guests are the audience to this next part of the conversation, verses 7 through 11. Remember while we read this that the custom in the more well-to-do houses in Jesus' time was that with a meal like this, remember we've said that they could either be in a large room if the person was really wealthy, more likely in the court of a house, and then in the court of the house, the thing would be set up where there would be a low table arranged like in a square U shape, and the host would be seated in the middle of this first table, and then the most honored guest would be on his right, the next on his left, and all the way around the sides of the table. And you can watch what happens. Most people think that they would recline on their left shoulder and their feet would be on a mat around it. Their feet would be sticking out behind them. And so this would be a part of the arrangement for the fellowship of the situation. Now, verse 7 through 11. Who'd like to read this? And Brendan, read this one for us.
And he began speaking a parable to the invited guests when he noticed how they had been picking out the places of honor at the table, saying to them, when you are invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for someone more distinguished than you may have been invited by him. And he who invited both you will come and say to you, give your place to this man, and then in disgrace you proceed to occupy the last place. When you are invited, go and recline at the last place, so that when the one who has invited you comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher, and you will have honor in the sight of all who are at the table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted.
Thank you, Raymond. Has anybody here ever gone to a ball game or some sort of a concert or a public situation like that, gotten in the wrong seat, and in the middle of what was going on, the ushers came down and removed you to your right place? Anybody, has that ever happened? Nobody willing to admit it. It's too embarrassing. What if it were in a gathering like this? You can kind of see what the Lord is saying. So think about it. What did he notice about their behavior? What was it that as he watched them? By the way, when you watch Jesus, remember that he's watching too, and that's the case here. What does he notice about the behavior of all the guests here? All right, that they are very careful in picking out strategically where they're going to be seated. And the idea of this dinner is a time for making appropriate contacts socially and so forth, which might allow us to be promoted either in the community or professionally or wherever. So where can I have the opportunity maybe to have somebody do me the most good in the future? Eddie?
Jesus' disciples had this same, basically.
Yes, they did.
An argument at one time.
At some awfully awkward times when you're getting close to the end of his ministry. They're still arguing over who's the greatest. Remember, James and John's mother wants the Lord to do them the favor. When you come to your kingdom, have one on my son's on your right side and one on the left. Only one small favor to ask of him. Now, how does the Lord respond to the values that, before I ask that, let me ask this. How does this fit with what we have learned about the values of the Pharisees, especially beforehand? We talked about this before. How does their behavior here fit with what you know of them?
They have a perception of other people.
All right.
How they view them.
Exactly. They love to be seen praying or to have the attention or to have people to move aside and give them room. They love salutations and places of honor and so forth. We learned that back in chapter 11 when we were looking at the house before this. So now describe, because of that, in your own words, describe the parable, or the meaning of the parable that Jesus taught them here.
Better to have somebody else
to
for you to end up being humbled
and something of a special. Or even humiliated might be the right word, yeah. Anybody else take a stab at it? That's good. Good job.
I call the underlying issue is pride. And I know the opposite of pride is when you aren't so proud, so you humble yourself.
All right.
I think that basically is what he's saying.
Okay. Anybody else?
Be prepared not to be moved up.
All right. Be prepared not to...
Be humble enough not to expect...
All right.
Yes.
Would it be possible to go in and to make a scene out of getting the lowest place so that everybody would notice that you were getting the lowest place and admire your humility? Well, what then is humility?
Not thinking about yourself, just thinking about what the other people are.
All right, it's not. The humble person doesn't walk around and say, I'm a worm, I'll sit over here in this last place here, you know. The humble person doesn't walk around saying, I'm humble when y'all going to exalt me. I humble myself when y'all didn't exalt me. I always have to sit in the lowest place. Why doesn't anybody ever... pick me up and move me up? Brendan got to sit there last time. You know, that's not humility either, is it? Humility is one of those one of those qualities which once you begin to think about it, it evaporates. And I think what Becky said about approaching this where you're not thinking about yourself might be the key to it. The practice of humility in Jesus' life was not, and he's our model after all, was not that he acted like he was a nobody or a nothing. But even in this situation, he is here without merely thinking about himself. And that's, look how bold and courageous humility is. He's a guest at someone's house, and yet he can do what needs to be done. He can be courageous. He can help people do better and so forth. Yet, the humility of it is, he's not being treated like he was worthy of being treated. They're watching him. It's going to cost him because the animosity is increasing. And he's going to be criticized over it because of what's done. I've collected some things over the years that I've appreciated about the quality of humility, and one I brought with me is this little description. It said, humility is knowing we are nobody when it looks like we're somebody. It's knowing we're somebody when it feels like we're nobody. It's being sufficient but lacking pride in sufficiency. It's knowing that merit is only merit for the moment and must be repeated and repeated. Another way of saying that is people don't care what you did last year. The master and the servant believe each other should be humble, but it exists in those who are not aware that they have it. Humility is feeling gratitude for every opportunity, but it's not being humiliated into groveling. It is being modest but not resigned. Humility is being plain folks who love and care for great and small, but give no special thought of whether anyone loves and cares about them. And that's a hard balance to keep in life, and I think it's what Jesus is recommending in this passage here, and it's consistent Bible theme. So with this second section, the way I've set it on your paper is sit in the lowest place. Just go in without thinking about yourself and the attention, whether it's on you or not. You sit in the lowest place, and then let the host exalt you. And you make, in each situation, you got to figure out who that is, maybe, but let the host, and of course, ultimately, God, exalt you. I've asked on the paper whether you can think of any other places in the scriptures where the same truth is taught. Can you think of other passages?
When that mentioned a while ago, I thought that the disciples were vying for the left and right.
He
washed their feet. That was another reason I thought.
Jesus washed their feet, and when he said, "Unless you humble yourself like this little child," that would be part of it. Anybody else think of it? I've written down here verses where this same idea is taught. I want you to notice how persistent it is throughout the Bible. Let me just ask some of you to read them. Becky, get Proverbs 29, verse 23. Michelle, get Matthew 23 and verse 12. Randy, get Luke 18, verse 14. Barney, get James 4, verse 10. We could read 6 and 10, probably. And then Tim Boland, get 1 Peter 5, verse 5. Maybe it's 5 and 6. I don't remember for sure. But just how many of us would think of humbling ourselves as a biblical command or biblical doctrine. Yet, you'll notice here how much this point is taught throughout the Scripture. So let's read the verses. Just listen to them. Proverbs 29:23, Becky.
A man's pride will bring him low, but a humble spirit will obtain honor.
All right. That's the reason for this. Luke 18:14.
I tell you.
Excuse me. Matthew 23:12. I don't want to get it out of order here.
And whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted.
Same truth, isn't it now? Luke 18:14.
I tell you, this man went down to his house justified.
Is that 18:14? Did I write down the wrong verse? Maybe the end of the verse is what I'm looking for, Randy. Go ahead. It is.
Man went down to his house justified rather than the other.
Now, this man in this case was the man who said, God be merciful to me, a sinner. He's the one who went down justified.
For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted.
All right. I think you notice the promise of God in those statements. All right. Next one. James 4:10.
Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up.
All right. And 1 Peter 5.
You younger men, likewise, be subject to your elders, and all of you clothe yourselves with humility toward one another. For God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time.
All right. You can see then what an important point this is. One of my favorite little stories I found somewhere, I have it, you can see. Some of you have heard this one before, but think about this. The story of the boy who was called on to give a speech, and he was not really mature yet, but he had an overabundance of self-confidence. And it says that when his name was called, he walked to the podium in a real proud gait, kind of bursting with his self-confidence, and then he got started with his speech, and just a few lines into it, he forgot what he was going to say, and he stammered a few times, and then just went completely silent. You know, just one of the brain freeze circumstances. And it finally just got so frustrated, he just dropped his head and slumped and walked back to his seat. And after the whole episode was over and after the occasion was over, there was an older lady in the audience who took him aside. And here's what she said to him. Think about this. If you'd gone up there like you came down, you could have come down like you went up. All right, and that's the point of this part of the conversation. All right, now number 3, verses 12 through 14. This time it is said, this part of it is said to the man who had invited him. This is his teaching to the host here. All right, John, would you mind to read this? Luke 14, verses 12 through 14.
What's John?
1 John.
There's only cause.
Okay. Michelle Long is right.
He said also to the man who had invited him, when you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your brother or your relatives or your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you in return and you be repaid. But
you're guessing real good, John. Go ahead.
But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you. You will be repaid at the resurrection of the past.
Of the judge. All right, now, Jim, before I forget to say this, you did a good job. Before I forget to say this, everybody notice the parallel between the last phrase of this section and the last phrase of the previous one. Will you notice that? He who humbles himself will be exalted, ended the previous section, and now you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just, ends this section. How are those two statements parallel?
Not right now that you're going to probably receive it.
All right. You may not, the exalting of the humble may not happen in the same hour in which the person humbles himself. But this will be how life works out. That's the idea. Now, real quickly, some questions. What might have caused Jesus to offer this advice to his host? He's noticed who's there. This is an invitation-only circumstance. And you look around and see this fellow has invited only a certain class of people. Now, was the problem who the man invited, or why he invited them?